We are here in Lviv, Ukraine, and we will talk with somebody about Operation Solidarity. Hello, can you introduce yourself and more specific, tell us something about Operation Solidarity?
Hey, my name is Yuri. I'm from Lviv, but currently in I'm from Kyiv, but currently I'm in Lviv. And I'm part of Operation Solidarity Initiative. We are a network of organizations which were founded shortly before the war, before the full-on invasion. I mean, the first aim was to provide our people, our comrades who joined military units with equipment they needed, also to help civilians, to help civilian activists with relocation, with the other needs they have, and to work also one of part of our work is talking to media, especially with Western like leftist and anarchist outlets, to explain the situation and how it looks from here, because very have a very obscure understanding of what's going on, and there are a lot of questions about what about NATO. Sometimes it seems from abroad that it's like a fight of two equally bad states, which is not the case in this.
Okay, you already told a few things about it, but maybe you can specify it even a little bit more. How did Operation Solidarity started? And because like you just said, you already started actually before the war broke out.
Yeah, several people had this initiative when Russian troops were massing at the border. Several people thought that it's invasion is very likely, and so there should be some structures to deal with the situation. And some of the members of anarchist community, they joined the forces, most of them like territorial defense units, because it was relatively easy to get there, and it's not as much like commitment as joining regular armed forces, which you need some training to do anyways. And so several people started to organize and these things. Then the invasion broke out, and most of the people who are now active actually joined like during first week or two of the invasion. Many of them were like people who participate in some initiatives over the years. Like some were not very active during last years. I mean, I led a pretty boring life for the last several years. Didn't do much in activism wise, except for participating in one like media project. Then, when this broke out, it was kind of a mobilization for the members of the movement. Even those who were kind of on, how to say, in activist retirement, they had to come back because you need to do. You cannot just stay aside because it's in situation like this.
Just to get an idea about the work of Operation Solidarity, how does an ordinary day look like?
Well, there are no ordinary days anymore. Every day is a little bit different, and it all depends on where are you and what specific processes are you involved into, because some people like. Different people deal with different kinds of stuff. Some looking for equipment or for anything else needed. Then there are people who are trying to buy it, and people who organize logistics chains and shipments. But it's not very straightforward, because most people do like a little bit of this and a little bit of that. So. It might be like you wake up and you don't have any particular plans for the day, then something comes up, or you may have like a lot of plans for the day, but then something comes up and you need to change them. And for the most part, it's been pretty busy and not many days off, and you cannot like plan in advance things, it's a bit hectic.
I mean, for us it's difficult to imagine, because most of us never were in a war situation. Can you tell us something about your experiences in the first days when the war started, how it developed?
First day, the actual invasion started at about like 5 a.m. I overslept a little bit. I woke up at 7 and woke up to sound of sirens and saw a lot of missed calls on my phone and started like realizing, okay, this is serious now. And first day I went to my workplace. I worked in a history museum in Kyiv. And so first day I spent like helping packing up artifacts and bringing them to the basement to get to the museum, though it wasn't as easy too, because by the time I live in Kyiv in like western part of the city, and by the time I was getting out from my home to go to a museum, a metro station already closed down there, and so I had to like pick up my bicycle and go to the city center by it. And first day felt pretty scary, because there wasn't a clear understanding of what's going on. I mean, what was clear what's going on, but it wasn't clear how will it progress. I mean, how fast Russian troops will advance, how many bombings will be there, and then so on. So many people, like highways leading out of the city, there were huge traffic jams because many people were trying to get out of the city, and so it was pretty chaotic, and nobody knew what to do. The second day I was home. And there were some like groups of Russian vehicles trying to break into the city because there was no defense checkpoint on the entrances, and which also kind of was pretty stressful, because like you try to check like is it safe for me to go to the city center now, or is there some shootouts on the way, you have to like constantly search scroll the news to get some information and to realize like what to do and what is like the safest way to proceed. Second day was also for me, I had nothing in particular to do, and I almost went crazy, because like there were sirens like every hour, and first I was like trying to get to shelter, and I hear the siren. I live on the 9th floor. Elevator is not working during sirens, and you have to go down, go to the shelter, stay in front of the shelter, smoke a cigarette, then nothing happened. Okay, maybe I go back. And so it was like the whole day. So later I just started to ignore sirens and just move farther from the windows and stayed in the apartment. And on the third day or so, I through my friend, I contacted the guys who were already doing something with this Operation Solidarity, and started helping there. It got much more, it calms you down when you have something to do. So yeah, and later, like first 2 weeks, you kind of adapt to the new reality, and you are not as nervous anymore. And also like Russian troops started like just slow down because of fierce resistance, and so situation became like a little bit more predictable, and which kind of also calming factor. Then when I came here to Lviv, it was like quite shocking because of how peaceful it was comparing to Kyiv, because in Kyiv you had like checkpoints every 100 meters and everyone is nervous, and territorial defense guys on checkpoints, some of them you could see that they can holding the gun maybe for the first time in their lives, and try to like not make any sudden moves in front of a checkpoint, or if you got out your phone from your pocket near the checkpoint, they would come to you and like ask you to put it back in your pocket, because they were afraid that of some spies filming the positions. I once had an occasion when I needed to go to pick up some medical stuff in Kyiv for Operation Solidarity, and I had a location where I was supposed to come, and then the number of person I should meet. And when I came to this, there was like a tram stop, and near it is a checkpoint. And I pick up my phone to call this person, and then the territorial defense guy, get it back. And I'm explaining the situation. He checked my documents. I explained the situation. I need to call this person who I'm supposed to meet. And, can I do that? Yeah, but do it in front of me. So it was like that. And then when you come to Lviv, like its atmosphere is very different. I mean, there was curfew also, but curfew was shorter. And despite the fact that our train arrived like 5 minutes after curfew, we found a vehicle to go to the place we were staying, no problem. And the guy on the way, he was complaining that, oh my God, it's like they set up checkpoints all over the city, you cannot pass. And we literally, like, we drove half through city, and we literally see not a single one single checkpoint. And so first few days it was kind of a strange feeling, but yeah, later, then you kind of accommodate and get used to the new reality.
Another question is, Operation Solidarity is now also an international network. Is there a difference between how the network is working in the Ukraine or outside, like for instance in Poland? And is there a common understanding, like a basic understanding of how and on what basis people work together?
I don't know if it's correct to call it like a single network, because like there are, but there are people like in Poland, in other European countries who we are cooperating with very closely, and they have like several initiatives who deal with it in Poland and in other countries. We have constant contact with them, especially like about things which should be bought or should be brought from Poland to Ukraine. And we have also, like, there is guys in Poland set up a warehouse, which is kind of like main logistic point of shipments, because like most of the stuff it first is brought there, and it gets like sorted out there, and then it goes like what's needed goes into Ukraine. And sometimes there are things which are like not necessary at that point, at this time, or we didn't find yet people who need those kind of stuff. So some stuff just for some time has to stay either in Poland or here in Lviv. Though we're trying to, we're trying to distribute it as fast as we can, so it doesn't sit in the warehouses. Yeah, and so we are on constant contact, and the internet. Thanks God, we didn't have internet disrupted at this point, and it works all right in most Ukraine. So, yeah.
As we understood, is that the anti-authoritarian platoon is part of the territorial defense forces and have some kind of autonomy, but still is part of the regular armed forces. If that's wrong, feel free to correct us. If not, can you specify the part that the platoon can take its own decisions and the part where the state is taking decisions that concern the platoon?
Yeah, well, lately, as far as I know, there was a tendency platoon is now like having less, a bit less maybe autonomy than in the first weeks. but they do like meetings, assemblies, and make some decisions concerning their day-to-day lives, concerning some media work, etc., etc. Like decisions of where do they go or what do they do. Like in combat, they cannot make those decisions because that's part of. Of officers of the army do that, and otherwise they still like have a bit more autonomy. It's not much, but still like a bit more than maybe like regular territorial defense unit has.
In Western Europe, but also in the US, some leftists and also some anarchists are always talking about NATO when they speak about the war. Some always start to talk about fascists in Ukraine, which for us is kind of interesting because most of them, they don't talk about the fascists on the Russian side, and there are many. What would you like to say to these people?
Well, about NATO, it's pretty straightforward. NATO isn't dropping bombs on Ukrainian cities at the moment. I mean, NATO did have a lot of shady and outright like criminal stuff they did over the years. I mean, no denying that. But in this particular case, we're not dealing with NATO here, because NATO isn't there are no NATO troops, and Ukraine joining NATO was one of official justifications by Russian government, but that's total bullshit, because nobody invited Ukraine to NATO. Like, the only thing they could prove this statement was that Ukraine, like during Poroshenko's presidential term, the willingness to join NATO was written into Ukrainian constitution, but it's more of a declaration rather than like some plan, because NATO officials, they repeatedly were saying that Ukraine, we're not ready to like receive Ukraine at the moment, and it was said like many times, and the process of Ukraine joining NATO didn't progress much over the last years. The NATO started supporting Ukraine with the weapons just like in weeks prior to invasion, in the beginning it was like mostly some anti-tank missiles, so things which like useful for guerrilla fight, because NATO countries apparently expected that Ukrainian government will fall in first days or weeks, and then it will be like some kind of guerrilla resistance going on, and so that kind of weapons. And they started supporting Ukraine with heavy weaponry only recently, when it became apparent the fight will be longer and it will be not such as they planned, because Ukrainian army is still intact and is still fighting. Yeah, but NATO didn't start this war. Russia did start this war due to some of the arguments they used were very ethno-nationalistic. So Putin in his speeches repeatedly denied existence of Ukraine, of Ukrainian people, of the language, of the culture, etc., etc. And many of the officials, of spokesperson, they of Russian government, they said many things like which resemble very much Nazi rhetorics, actually. And Russian state itself, it was getting like leaning more and more towards fascism, like during recent years. And now, like Russia, look at Russia, and it's pretty much a full-on fascist state at this point. And they even used the words final resolution of Ukrainian issue and one of the articles, which kind of same thing Hitler said about Jews. And the speech about starting the invasion itself, all this speech Putin made a few days before the invasion, I mean, if you read it and if you compare it with the speech Hitler made before invading Poland, sometimes it's I don't know. I don't know that drawing these historical similarities is often a bad and unscientific thing, but similarities are striking sometimes. And yeah, of course, there were some and still are some representatives, some far-right groups in Ukraine, but they do not have as much influence in mainstream politics, because like there is not a single far-right party in Ukrainian parliament, and wasn't since 2014. Maybe some deputies, maybe, but not so many. So like even comparing to other countries in Central Eastern Europe, Ukraine didn't have as much of a Nazi problem.
Actually, most European Union countries, like Spain, you have Fox now, and Germany, you have the AfD, you have Le Pen in France, and they are all in parliament.
And you have Orban in Hungary, which is which is a ruling regime, yeah, by now. And so comparing to that, Ukraine, of course, Ukrainian state did have and does have a lot of shortcomings, and we have many reasons not to like it, but at the same time, like, it's nothing like a fascist dictatorship. Quite the opposite, actually, because many of state structures, they were not functioning properly, and this is one of reasons why this self-organizing thing in Ukraine during the war is so effective and widespread, because many people got used to the notion that if you want to do something, you will probably need to like do it yourself, because otherwise it won't be done. So yeah, and the actual current president is actually Jewish, of Jewish origin, I mean, and he comes from like predominantly Russian-speaking region, and before the invasion he actually spoke Russian better than Ukrainian. And so, yeah, I'm not sure what kind of problem with fascism we're talking about when you talk about Ukraine. I mean, some far-right organizations, yeah, for sure, we do have them, but who doesn't? But on a state level, not so much.
Yeah, yesterday we had several explosions in and around Lviv for us, or most of us. It was a new experience. And not a nice one. But for you, this is probably the new normal. Is that so? And if yes, how do you live with that? How does it affect people on a psychological level?
Well, in Lviv, it's still not a new normal, because like missile hits like that are not as common in Lviv, because there were like over these 2 months, there were just several hits, and like yesterday it was probably the biggest ones. Yeah, it's unpleasant, of course, but at the same time, many people have it much worse in other regions, especially like in Kharkiv, or we are not even talking about it is like Mariupol or occupied areas, because it's much, much worse there. So here we kind of lucky we have so few of them in Lviv right now. So, but yeah, at the same time, it's kind of it's getting nervous. And like yesterday, when these explosions hitting, we actually had like a small birthday party. it kind of spoiled the fun a little bit, to be honest. Psychologically, it affects different people differently, I guess. I don't know. I personally kind of got used to it, kind of just keeping in mind that it probably won't hit you directly, and just be as careful as you can, mitigate the risks, and try not to worry about things you cannot influence. Yeah, for some people, yeah, it's kind of unnerving, of course.
Yeah, we noticed that some people are really like running in the street and really are panicking in their face, mm-hmm. And others, they were just walking normal, or even sitting outside on a terrace and were looking to the people who were running and like, well.
Yeah, so everybody reacts differently to situations like this.
Okay, I have one final question, and that's how can people support the work of Operation Solidarity?
Well, there are various ways to support, of course, different accounts for donations. Also, informational support is also very important. to like, spread the information, what's really is going on, spread the voices of people here, counteract these narratives, these false narratives about Ukraine as a fascist state, and NATO is also to blame. Not in this case. I mean, let's blame NATO for things they actually did, not some fantasies. And it's informational front is one of the most important now, actually, because after first month when Russian propaganda seemed like they kind of were losing in the West, and now there are some activization of these troll factories, etc., etc., and now see more and more presence comes slipping in Western media, and of course that have to be counteracted.
Okay, we thank for the chat, and thank you for your time.
Thank you.